everyone, and welcome to ET Healing and Explorations in Consciousness with my wonderful co-host tonight, Veronica Entwistle.
Good evening, everybody.
Hey, Ronnie.
Hi, Jackie.
Hi, honey. The blonde and the redhead.
I'm the one with the lipstick on.
I know, and I'm not. All right, tonight's show, The Power of Love versus the Love of Power. And tonight we discuss how the power of love can see us through the ascension process, and the lure of the love of power can slow our path. The evidence is all around us and can seduce us when we least expect it. As we reclaim our power, how will it be to use it? All right. As always, guys, before we get into the show,
I like that. As we reclaim our power, how will we use it? Now you've got me really thinking. I'm just spinning here.
Oh, well, you know, it's going to be an interesting show, Ronnie.
Yeah.
And we have some great emails, and I know everyone says they love it when we share the emails. So the first two are about slipping into fifth dimension, and we're going to hear more and more about this, guys. It's going to happen spontaneously, a little here, a little there, and it excites the heck out of me.
Me too.
This is kind of a long one, but the person that wrote this is quite a teacher in her own right, so I'm going to share it in its entirety. Let's see. Back in the mid-70s, I worked with a wonderful hypnotist on releasing pain of scoliosis and attempting to pull my spine back into alignment. This was before my right hip pulled out of the socket and created more problems. My visualization of a peaceful place to be while healing was occurring was a place I called God's Garden. The garden was outside a very high gray stone wall with a plethora of beautiful flowers, bushes, and trees in front of it. A little further out, a peaceful stream flowed by. A small boat was pulled up on the sand, and a set of oars were balanced in their sockets. The sky was a vibrant blue, and with a few fluffy clouds, the water in the stream was so clear you could see your reflection in it, and was so pure it invited you to drink it, which I occasionally did. The flowers were so incredibly beautiful and colorful, they defied description. Never did I see God, but sensed the loving presence each time I visited the garden. It always made me think of home and the paradise that I had left when I came into Earth life. And I just want to say here, this particular person is the one I've referred to before that's helping a lot of the animals that are crossing over cross into the fifth dimension. She's quite an amazing being. Mm. Often I would climb into the little boat and float down the stream until slowly the trees and garden would be left behind, and only a dry desert surrounded us. At this point, I always came out of my hypnotic trance. I remember thinking at the time, why can't I maintain this magical place? I don't ever remember receiving an answer. Lately, I've been given intention to move on to the fifth-dimensional world as soon as possible. I'm sure many of us have done this to one degree or another, but this morning I was shown a little bit of this fifth-dimensional world. Just as I laid down on the spine warts, which is a thing for her spine, in preparation to begin the healing process I do each morning, I suddenly realized I was not in pain anymore, and my hips and spine seemed to be in perfect alignment. Wow, I was so excited I felt Miss Kitty jump up on the bed with me and then realized I was once again in God's garden, a place I hadn't thought of in many years. But this time, Miss Kitty was there with me. We walked for a time among the flowers and trees so Miss Kitty could investigate them all, then walked down to the stream to drink of the living waters. At this time, we appeared to be alone, and yet there were thousands of souls there with us, both human and animal. I could sense them but not actually see them. We climbed into the little boat and began to slowly drift down the stream, Miss Kitty sitting on my lap so she could see all around her. I discovered that if I looked into the water, I could see images of the many of the souls I felt around me. And I dangled my hand in the water, I received an electrical impulse from the many hands I touched. This time as we drifted down the stream, no desert impeded our progress, and the idyllic journey continued. After a while, we pulled into a small mooring spot on the opposite bank of the stream and disembarked into an area with a short grassy knoll, which we climbed. The vision slowly faded after this as we sat in the grass enjoying the peacefulness of the scene, but the memory has remained with me and I am prompted to share it. The veil is thinning rapidly now as we approach the final shift. We are told, do not fear the holographic events you see and feel around you. View them dispassionately and let them go. Send them love and watch them disappear. Transmute them. Look for the beauty in everything around you and learn to live in love and the now. We are the shift we are looking for with great expectation. We cannot do it for others, but we can plant the seeds of the shift in others where they can grow. I thought that was absolutely beautiful.
Wonderful.
And another one experiencing the shift, which we've heard from her many times before, and Ronnie, you know this person as well. I've been writing to you and then deleting what I write and going about my day. I want to thank you for the sessions. They're all so powerful, and when cords are pulled and power reclaimed, seems like it comes from such a deep place within my universe or the other person's. I don't always see, and I do, however, feel. Even pulling some of the cords takes time and feels so thick. But there a while, you think? Such a relief when released. Even had pains in organs, the next day the shit would release, literally, haha. Now for my debating with myself about writing to you. I had a couple of dreams after my sister and self-retrieval. I was sleeping in that wonderful altered state and could not open my eyes. I felt as I did when I was a child. And Mr. Magoo, the carton was on.
Cartoon
was on, and how much he scared me. He didn't have eyes, and then he would put his glasses on, and he would have huge eyes. Funny, the triggers. Well, the dream continued, and I reached up to feel my eyes, and I felt no eyes, not even any place that the eyes go. Sometimes I get so confused with being multidimensional. A woman came to me, was that you? And hugged me and said it was not about seeing, feel, dear one. Then I woke. I began to feel just a little, don't want to overdo it. I find that with the retrieval with my sister, I regained some of my safety and trust. The next day I was driving to work and my mind was all over the place. I remembered you saying at last session to relax the mind. So I focused on my brain, relaxing it, and then something wonderful happened. It fell apart. Both hemispheres fell open like a melon, and I could breathe deeper. Next, I know everything looks different. I am now above me, looking around. Wow, so clear, clean, and crisp. Of course, my issue of being wrong comes, and I give it the boot because being in that place felt so good. The next day I went into meditation and I was taken to a cave led by my inner child. The cave was dark and damp, as I suppose a lot of caves are, and on the walls were faces of fear, terror, and sorrow. I kept moving, not allowing the distraction to stop me. The cave began to get lighter. It opened up and there was a magnificent light shining, so white it was hard to gaze upon. I began to take a shape, a large winged being, so beautiful. I heard myself ask if it would come and live in me. I felt its wings surround me, and then I felt wings began to grow on me. This gift has touched me so deeply. I know that it is a result of the work with you and the work with me. I don't have to do anything with them except wrap them around me. Oh, I do fly once in a while, too. I now move around at times, and I'm not moving. Everything around me is moving. I take the dogs for a walk. I feel myself moving, yet the trees are going past me. I am not passing the trees. Is this being in the now? Is this the time and space falling away?
Wonderful.
I love these. So a couple of examples of what people are experiencing with this moving back and forth into these other dimensions. And like I said, we're going to see more of it. I'm hearing a lot of it from clients. Are you, Ronnie?
Mm-hmm.
Are you hearing it from your clients as well?
Yeah. Yes, I am. Sorry, I was... yes, I am. Not as much. We've been working in the grueling kind of gut stuff lately, but this woman I know, and we've had some experiences with that, too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, another one. Feedback regarding, and we won't use his name, is that he's working for me again, and now it is without all of those hooks in the way and is flowing smoothly, lovingly, and easily. I'm so grateful for that, and I can feel the difference strongly. It was well worth doing the power of retrieval with him, and I do not regret it at all. What a joy to relate to him now.
That is so wonderful, because that feeling of being able to have a totally different relationship with someone when you unhook all that is so terrific.
It's so powerful.
Oh, wonderful.
Now, I'm going to read this next one, and I want to kind of give a little preface. I'm really having problems with my mouth tonight. Anyway, a little background.
They just washed it and can't do a thing with it.
That's it. You did your hair, I did my mouth. Okay, this was someone's first session, and I'm going to share it with you in its entirety because what's interesting is the fear that she had, and there was something that came up during the session that has never happened before, and I've done at least 3,400 sessions. I quit counting at 3,400 in a little over 3 years. So what I finally gathered from all of this is that what they said, and you'll hear it in her letter, was intended to actually stir some of her fear. All right. I have some questions and also want to report on what I've experienced. First of all, I want to express that during the session, I had some doubts creeping into my mind. I did not feel this way during the days leading up to the session. It started when you were in channel and said something about reading a statement and quickly changed your statement that you know, as the team, what to say and don't need to read it. This made me wonder if this was a scam. Now, this pertained to the invocation that's done, and the invocation has been done for every session. So I was perplexed why, because I'm in channel, why they kind of, you know, said that we're going to read an invocation. Then we said, no, they said, no, we don't need to read it. I tried to put this out of my head and just go with the moment. And as you said in the archives on the show, to choose to only experience the good in the moment. Then when you were asking, and this is after, well, no, they asked, when you were asking so many questions about my mother and father and health issues, I thought, should not the team know what I meant in my intentions if they could indeed look into my body in order to heal it? The thought that you might be someone trying to gather personal info to steal my identity. I kept pushing this out of my mind and decided that if that was the case, then I would try to find some learning from the experience and would have to just deal with when and if it comes up. I've been so desperate for relief and healing that I chose for the experience to be real and to receive positive changes from this. On a different note, I felt strange things during the session, a pressure on my chest, a pain on the left side of my body. The headache that I had finally went away after having it all day, and I did have a feeling of energy surrounding my body. Also, I had a very vivid dream, a nightmare, even though I don't have an actual memory of the dream. I awoke from a sense of terror, not fear, actual terror. My heart was racing and I was breathing heavily. This is not the first time I've had this similar experience. The difference was that I took a moment to repeat to myself that I am loved and protected and was able to go back to sleep. In the past, I would have been in such a state that I would lie awake for hours, if not all night, because of the fear of going back to sleep and experiencing the terror again. Sleep has always been an issue for me because ever since I can remember, I dreaded going to bed and have always stayed up until complete exhaustion forces me into bed. I'm now able to see that this is probably due to my experience with the Grays. I would never have thought that it was my experience, but suddenly when I was listening to the archives, it made perfect sense to me. I did not doubt it at all. That seems strange to me that I would accept all this easily. Sorry this was so long, but I really want to get these feelings out to you. Thank you for all you do. And I just want to give a little background. It was a very interesting first session with people, and I have called them lube and tune sessions because during a session you have three things going on. In the channeling, they are not there with you. The channeling is very different, and the frequencies coming through my voice are having an impact on the emotional body. That is totally separate from the team who is there working on the people. And I just want to say this to everybody. The emotional body is an anathema from the other side of the veil because we're working with all potential realities. So the first session, and even Lazarus Ronnie, and I know you remember this, when Lazarus would do their first session with somebody, they would never do a life reading because it took one session to really move through all of the layers. And when I talk about the layers, what I'm really saying is that when you're coming in from those levels, radiating around you are all of the other potential realities that you could be living in the moment by just a shift of your choices and decisions. You can literally move back and forth between all of these different realities. Now, that's kind of a wild concept, and that probably is a whole show, but I wanted to share that.
It's like the woman who went into the fifth dimension, the first one you read.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, and anybody who's read Dolores Cannon's books, if you really paid attention, people were doing that very thing. They were shifting from dimension to dimension and not knowing that they were doing it.
Hmm.
So, they could be driving through a town and all of a sudden it's 20 or 30 years earlier. So, interestingly enough, the first session with people is a fact-finding. All the questions are asked about people's intentions to see where their emotional body, their answers, they're not looking so much for the words, but the energies that are invoked based on the intentions that they have. It's a very interesting dynamic. The second sessions and subsequent sessions are much different. But that first session is always very interesting. And I was perplexed about the, you know, why they would say read the invocation or whatever. But it was actually to trigger those fears that were in her anyway. And that's the only thing I can come up with. Because that's just not, you know, if they had said it before, I might feel differently. But in 3,400 times, it's never been said. So
it's never been said that they were going to read it or not read
Absolutely
it?
Absolutely not. The intention, the invocation has never been written down on paper, ever. It literally comes through, but it has never actually been written in, you know, in word form. So I found it very interesting. And I wanted to share that because I think that
So they were challenging her trust, right? Would she
Absolutely. And because of the experience that she is, experiences that she's had, and of course she did book another session, and, you know, we're going to be able to help her and change a whole lot of things. But I loved her honesty, and I loved what she's going through, and the fact that she was willing to share it, and I'm willing to share it with the listeners, because I think it's important that everybody understand, for all of us, that we're going to have different perspectives on experiences. The next one is from our regular weekly writer who we both adore, Ronnie.
Yeah, she's wonderful.
And, you know, she's
very clever.
Writing books. Dear Ronnie and Jackie, gosh, I love you girls. Re-identification to me is the reinventing yourself with doing the healing. Now, this is based on last week's show. Brilliant. Of course, the healing part can be tricky and elusive if one isn't aware that re-identification means much, much, much more than a new hairdo, makeover, new car, new home, new mate, and the like. The awareness of my re-identification makes me feel invisible to my former lifestyle and beliefs. I see it as my very own personal lifting of my veil. I marvel frequently that I used to like that or do that or feel that or want that, be around that, eat that, desire that, yada, yada, yada. I still do feel want, eat, and desire, but my that keeps evolving. Reflecting back on my life has me confused at times as who I used to be. No doubt others no longer are able to relate to the new me and wonder what in the world has happened. I'll tell you, it is the result of something from out of this world, and that has transformed my very being, and to that I extend my gratitude to Jackie and the team. Thank you. The power retrievals can be extremely intense, as those who have done them will almost likely agree, and particularly the sessions done with mother and father. The bad news is one may need to redo mom and dad because of the chain of pain, as Jackie says. I also think that even the team doesn't want to deal with it all in one session, and who can blame them? The good news is typically we all have only one mother and one father, so there is a light at the end of the tunnel. Hallelujah. Yesterday, the team thoughtfully gave me a respite from the power retrieval healing, and I appreciated the intermission to the drama of my life. But we engaged in a chakra session that was so uplifting that I didn't want it to end. It was magical, just as they said it would be. I truly believe I can happily live in the void with side trips to the caves. I need to discuss this option with the team next time. Smile. And what she's talking about is once people have done the chakra activation, they take you through the void from the material to the magical, to this incredible place where things are kind of backwards. And but there are these caves, and each cave represents the chakras, and there is an incredible ritual that occurs in each cave that is a major activation of the chakra that is done. Part of it you are aware of, and part of it you are out. And it is. It includes so many beings that participate. It's just magical. I mean, I could go on forever. But okay, now on to my question about last week's show and the discussion about hooks. Do you believe that hooks are part of our imprinting when we were born into the earthly plane? This is really good. Are we caught hook, line, and sinker into our current incarnation? Do we keep adding hooks as we spend more time with certain individuals? And I want to stop right here because this is so good. And from my perspective, and I know, Ronnie, you see energies different than I do, but I'm seeing pretty much through their eyes and through the client's eyes, so it's different. But the hooks that I know that are there that we come in with are the ones in the third eye.
I had a big one from my mother there.
Yes. As to any of the other hooks, I think that there are hooks that are built in to the chain of pain, to the familial chain of pain, second chakra, throat chakra, and third eye. I think those are built in. And often, of course, other places as well. But consistently, child, parent is second chakra and throat because they have power over you, and probably third chakra as well. But I, Ronnie, I'm certainly open to anything else you've got to say on this.
Well, my question of you is, do you think it's through hooks that we maintain the incarnational connection, or are there many other ways, are there not? I guess I would have answered this by saying sometimes depending on the nature of the relationship and where you interact, rather than there's any normal way of doing it, And yes, I think you could keep creating hooks with people, but hopefully we're getting so conscious we're undoing that process of the chain of pain.
We are undoing it. Do we develop hooks with people? And the answer is absolutely yes.
Mm-hmm. But we can move that into a choice position, can't we?
Yes. Again, the whole, we'll get into that a little bit here. But with the whole power issue and empowerment issue, it now becomes optional. As long as we don't run into the codependence and some of the old ways that we've dealt or needing to have power over, and the minute we get into that dynamic, we're going to start hooking in every time. On the other hand, can we ever become ensnared by distracting ourselves from people and situations?
By distancing, I think.
Or distancing, I'm sorry, ourselves from people and situations.
That's an interesting question.
Boy, that's a great question.
Both of us were completely silent.
Right.
I like that.
I would say this. If you're distancing because you already have hooks, it's not going to work.
Right.
I would put it this way, and certainly we all have exes, and I'll go there. If we try to stay away from them, or distance them because we're afraid of getting ensnarled into, I don't know what happened to my brain tonight, into a situation or into another energy dynamic, okay? And we haven't cleaned up all of the other stuff. It is strictly distraction. If you've cleaned it up and you make the choice that you no longer choose to interact with that person, that's totally different.
But it's like to become unensnared is actually to do an intense releasing on that person, even if they're in Timbuktu and you're here, right?
Absolutely, even if they're on the other side of the veil.
Right.
I'm still working with one person, and it's taking me forever to work through them. I'm finding that the way it's hooked and connected is so deep, and I'm going through actually physiological issues again of I'm only through the third chakra.
Is it the same person you were speaking of last week?
No, this is a different one.
Right,
and this is the one where there was a huge soul connection and we're having other lifetimes in other places right now. I mean, it's very, very deep. And I can feel where I actually have one that I didn't get to, and it's acting up on me, and it's in the third chakra. And so I need to complete it, but it has been really, really deep. So you have anything else to say on that one, Ronnie?
No, but you were... of course. I was just thinking about how many lives. Like, I had somebody say to me once, I was taking a long time to recover from someone that I had broken up with. And she said, "Are you still attached to him?" And I looked at her and I saw something like 2,500 years involvement with a person. I said, "Are you still attached to that person?" I mean, we really have to get it clear that everything is so so infinite, like you're talking about other lives. And I like what you're... I don't like it. I mean, I'm fascinated when you're talking about how deep and how intricate, and sometimes the most important people in our journey are like that, aren't they?
Well, absolutely.
And they may not be obviously important.
No, they can be cursory and yet be hugely important, and that's what I'm really seeing with the power retrievals.
Wow.
The other thing I'm seeing is that we are going through lifetimes, not just one. And some of them are so deep, I literally want to climb right out of my skin.
Hmm.
I'm being absolutely honest here. They are difficult for me, you know, if they could just knock me out, I'd be thrilled.
You mean they hurt physically?
Energetically, they are really difficult because we're traversing through time and space and multiple lifetimes. And some of the ensnare is a very good word. Some of the ensnaring is really deep, really deep.
So it's a part of your deep energetic fabric, that part of us that's infinitely ancient, right?
That's the one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's taking me so long with this particular person to get through it.
Is the person on this plane at this time?
Yes, yes, mm-hmm. Yes, he is. And
does he know what you're doing?
No, he does not. And but it's very... it's really deep, and it's my freedom. I mean, I know that, and also his. This one is... the others are a cakewalk compared to this. Let's just put it that way.
Mm.
And I would kill to be on the other end of the phone to have, you know, we've talked about this, Ronnie, to be able to do this in session. You know, it's just, it's very, very deep, really deep.
And it's part of your, even your bone structure.
It is.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's something that's very interesting to mention, that it is a part of our whole physical fabric, you know, body, flesh, bones.
It's everything. And interestingly enough...
I don't think all of them are, right?
No, not necessarily. But, you know, you're very observant. Ronnie, you're good. You're just good, honey.
So you don't.
That's... I actually, when I was with this person, fractured a number of ribs and had a horrible accident that where I was literally broken up pretty badly.
Hmm.
And that's what's happening is that I'm having it through my ribs and it's radiating through and that's where the pain's coming from. So it, working in that third chakra, that's why it's taking me so long.
That's also an ancient death injury for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, and he probably killed me, too.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's very interesting because we might know this, but it's good to be reminded how deep all these things are.
Well, this is why people after the power retreat is going to have some physiological symptoms and, you know, like having diarrhea or having, you know, some kind of pains and so on, some discomfort, some, you know, really strange dreams. Let's go on with her. On the other hand, can we ever become unensnared by just distancing ourselves from people and situations? Do hooks come in different sizes, or is it a one-size-fits-none situation? Now, this is a great statement, and I'm going to talk about it a little bit later, is that I am seeing these, I want to say a coil, but it's not. It's a, what's another word for coil, Ronnie?
I don't know, spiral?
A corkscrew. When they're really heavy duty, and I've seen this with people who are working on major issues of power and control and feminine and so on, feminine, masculine, where these can be corkscrews in the chakras. And, I mean, they're tricky to get out. So can one unhook from another without doing a power retrieval if they consciously choose? You know, I'm going to say this to you. I don't have a full answer to that. I think you can do a lot of unhooking to do it through the lifetimes and so on. At this juncture, I would say probably not. Ronnie knows that I struggle with doing this on my own. Mm-hmm. And even though I know the team assists me, it takes me so long, even with all their assistance, and I do it on the table. Can one unhook from another without doing a... Okay, I'm going to go back to this for a minute.
But I just want to say something, is I think you can do some.
Yes, and I agree with that.
You have an extreme situation, which is pivotal for your entire being, and that's not so easy.
When we do them, there is your higher self orchestrates totally. I mean, I'm seeing this session after session after session, exactly who's next. And it comes into your experience like that. When we do them, there is such an array of beings present, both for the person that you're working with and yourself. And also through as other lifetimes as we go through the third eye, and they're clearing through the third eye and all of these cords that are attached through the third eye, It literally feels like it's coming right out of my, it's not only my solar plexus, but it's like coming out of the center of my being as they're working through me.
Mm.
So it's pretty deep. Let's see.
Can I say something about, you know, when she talked about one size fits none, it's quite funny. One of the retrievals you did with me was with a girlfriend who I've had a long soul history with, and there was a lot of discomfort between us when things aren't right, and we never fight or anything. It's just really uncomfortable. But I noticed when we went after the hooks that she had in me, they were very clear hooks. But when I found the ones I had in her, there was this funny little elegant little locked box, and I think it had seven little... And every now and then I muse on that. I go, well, that was something. I mean, I guess I considered there was a degree of finesse in there, or I don't know. What do you think that was? It certainly is one size fits none. It's kind of funny. And it was in her the left side of her belly area.
Right. You know, I'm going to say this. It's never really the same with anybody. It's interesting when people go in and take out hooks and... You know, however I'm hooked into all of this, they see more, I see more, and they will let people take out what they're ready to retrieve, knowing that there may be more there.
Hmm.
Sometimes they'll say, no, there's more there, and sometimes they'll let them sit.
Well, so are you telling me that my cute little box full of things was just the way I could handle it rather than that was really what was going on?
I think it really is based on, you know, there is no single truth. each one of our consciousness
is
so beautifully creative that I think we're going to see it based on that. Sometimes it looks really concrete to me, and other times, you know, I recognize that it is, it's, I want to say malleable. I think that the props are different.
Hmm.
Let's put it that way.
Sort of the metaphor that suits the poetry of your own being rather than...
There you go. Beautiful words, Ronnie. Thank you. Thank you for being elegant tonight, since I seem to be having a hard time moving my mouth, period.
I told you. I put my lipstick on.
Uh-huh. All right. The next time I'll do the same thing. The universe ever heard of catch and release? That was her final statement. Wonderful writer. I can hardly wait for her to get her first book out.
Me too. She's a wonderful writer. So much energy and enthusiasm and wisdom.
Absolutely.
And humor.
And just as an aside, in her last session she asked, because her computer screen keeps flashing at her, and they finally said, I don't know if it was them or me or who, it doesn't matter anyway, was automatic writing, that if she would sit down at her computer and start asking questions, that there are those on the other side of the veil just waiting to work with her, really waiting to work with her, because she's such a great vehicle for bringing information forward.
Mm-hmm.
So tonight's subject, let's get into it. You know, Bashar has really talked about the love of power versus the power of love. And, you know, I know that in one intensive he did in Hawaii when I was there last year, he brought it up quite extensively, and when I'm with Bashar, I leave my body and remember nothing. So, unfortunately, I don't...
Well, you're a great source.
Yeah, aren't I? I always say to Daryl, who channels him, could you, like, leave me in my body tonight, please? There was a new book out, and that's what really prompted this.
I think you need a hook. That's what you needed.
Yeah, obviously, I need to hook in just a little.
Yeah.
It's called Waking the Global Heart. Humanity's Rite of Passage from the Love of Power to the Power of Love. And I'm just going to read a couple of sentences on this because this is what prompted I received this. Of course, I always figure that they're sending messages any way they can. Waking the Global Heart articulates a guiding vision for the transformational passage of our time. A new identity must emerge that is based on planetary stewardship and global community rather than ego-based individualism. This requires the enchantment of a new myth, a fundamental awakening to an inspirational vision. Lasting transformation cannot be generated by fear, guilt, or control, but must be motivated from the heart. This comprises a shift from our current values based on the love of power to those motivated by the power of love. What awakens the heart is the soul of the world itself and the very real possibility of a wondrous future. Anyway, this is just an excerpt, and what happened is I got this in the morning and then went out and did my power walk, and it just kept ringing through my head, you know, the love of power, you know, versus the power of love. And I kept, so I came back, I said, okay, guys, is this the show? And they said, yes, hello. one other excerpt that came to me this week was not related to this book, but if you're interested in looking it up, again, it's called Waking the Global Heart, and you can search it on the Internet. It's easy to feel ashamed and want to hide what you have discovered about yourself, but we all have a shadow, the part of ourselves that doesn't live up to our highest ideals. Talking about fear or power or lust doesn't mean that you're going to be stuck there. Awareness and acknowledgement are, in fact, the first steps to change. So I want to talk about a really, you know, again, it comes when it comes, once the subject comes in, well, then everything kind of starts opening up. And I did a session with this extraordinary woman that I just adore, powerhouse. And I've talked about her before, and she is letting go of all her material possessions, and she's going to become a counselor and, you know, do some really great work. And in doing a power retrieval with her, this was so amazing. And with her always, just before her session, something will come up. The minute that she calls in channel, they'll immediately key into it before she says a word and immediately direct the session there. And this was with a man and with a former boss of hers, but someone she'd known for a very long time. And there were these corkscrews in his second chakra. I don't remember where else. But what was interesting, they never said anything to her through the session, did the session, and then asked her what she thought. And she got it loud and clear that she was hooking in the feminine into their second chakra, but it was the controlling, the powerful feminine instead of coming from the empowered feminine. Hmm. And so it's really... it's going to necessitate that we run our energies differently than we ever have before. And I really want to direct this towards women. If you guys are listening, well, you'll love it too. Because there's so much anger at men and God and the masculine. And the twist of this energy is the new archetype, which is what it's become. And it is the empowered feminine that wants to make men pay for all that has happened to them, to repress and control the feminine throughout history. So it's not the empowered loving feminine, it's the empowered feminine that wants men to pay up. Have you run into this, Ronnie?
Oh, of course. And I was just thinking how you were saying the lure of the love of power, there's a lure of the love of power. And I thought how interesting it is, the lure of love is one of the ways of drawing men in to create that attachment, right?
Well, it comes, you know, men, because they're looking for their own feminine, are they're enchanted in a way by powerful women. They're also afraid of them.
Right.
And they should be.
You should have said you can't blame them. That's just there's a vengeance or vengefulness about that which has gone on, you know.
There definitely can be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I see it as a very interesting dynamic. It's time for us to change that. You know, we're all looking at embracing our own masculine and our feminine and becoming empowered in a way that is loving so we don't have to make anybody pay any more.
And I just want to mention a woman that I was working with yesterday that I've worked with off and on for a few years too, and she, her in and around the ovaries, she was trying to get down into the feminine, the powerful feminine and the non-reactive. But it was so interesting. We were way down in the ovaries, and what came up in her was this really intrinsic defiance. And she hadn't noticed it. It was so powerful, but it was way under the surface. And her relationships have not worked. Nobody can sort of match her expectation or whatever. So she draws them in. But there's this, if you could see this kind of defiant energy coming out at such a deep level, you can see how, you know, a person couldn't really mate. I hope we moved it, but it was really intense. And both of us were fascinated, you know.
Well, there are two problems there. One is that women have an ideal, what the ideal mate, and I'm sure men do as well, the ideal mate is. And it becomes the third party in a relationship. And I've talked about this before. You have the man, the woman, and then the ideal. And the man will never match up to that ideal.
No, he can't. The other thing is if you have a stored, for example, like this woman, a stored defiance way underneath, and you do have the ideal, you're going to be pushing this energy forward and disrupting or making it uncomfortable, you know, distorting the ideal.
Well, almost defying them to try to match up, knowing that they aren't.
Yes. So you're creating a problem. Yeah. It's
and
very interesting.
Ultimately defeating them. And it becomes a competition with men to prove to them that they are more powerful. And it reminds me of the statue of Kali standing on her husband, you know.
And the other thing is the woman herself is disappointed that the male, she doesn't even realize it, but there's a disappointment that the male cannot, move through her, for example, defiance, just staying with that example, that he can't move through it and he can't reach her or synergize or get close to her at some level because he's being blocked.
Well, I think that's not unusual, though, Ronnie.
I know it isn't, but I thought it was a good example.
Yeah, it's a perfect example. So I'm going to go back to the power retrievals for a moment. Power retrievals, the goal is to take your power back and your energy and light and give it back to the other person. And all of theirs as well, to set you both free. The problem that I see and in this is that people still sometimes are still carrying anger and blame. And if you're still carrying anger and blame, you can do a power retrieval 20 times with the same person. You're not going to get there. Doesn't matter who they really are, who you see them to be at the end of the retrieval. Ultimately, if you're still carrying the anger and blame, you're back to square one, not square one, but you've got to go back and keep doing it till you can clear the anger and blame. You're not going to stay there forever, but it is a side trip. The other thing, of course, is embodying our own masculine and feminine. And, this to me, I saw a painting years ago. I have no idea who did it. And it was actually a vagina with teeth.
I've seen that.
And now, this is in the male psyche, and I watched it on, I think this is really an important point here, that men are afraid of women in lots of ways, which is why they try to control them, because they actually fear the power of the feminine. And this is built into the system.
Mm-hmm.
This goes way back to when, there was a goddess and, all of that was repressed. And, we've got thousands of years now on the planet with this fear of the feminine. And in both
the masculine, in both the woman and the man.
Absolutely. And in order for us to move now where we need to go, and this is why it's so poignant in terms of power,
But it's interesting because the real power we have is so sometimes inaccessible because of all this other stuff.
Absolutely.
8,000 years or however long it's been.
Exactly, Ronnie. And so the real power, and, when you come to the point where you are fully empowered, you don't need to have power over anyone or anything. You become the very energy that you need to become in order to move into that fifth dimension. And it's kind of a paradox on the planet right now, and I know, you and I could sit and talk about this subject forever in terms of what we're seeing with women and how many women are still trying to heal their relationship with God and the masculine.
Mm-hmm.
And, and I know a lot of really powerful women that no matter how powerful they are still dealing with it.
This is so ancient. It's like what you're dealing with. It's even in your bones. It's not just a piece of cake there.
No.
It's part of our construct or our entire cellular doodah.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm.
But we're getting there. a few divorces, a few split marriages, a few this.
Well, let's talk about the power side of this for a minute also, and it's not just the feminine. And Ronnie, you and I have both seen this for years, and I'm sure a lot of you out there listening have as well, that we've seen, channels and spiritual teachers and those that have direct contact with their guides assert themselves as having power over others or being more powerful than others. And again, it's a trap. And we've seen a lot of people fall into it. Ronnie, I know you have. I know I have.
Mm-hmm.
Where they had great messages and great abilities and got stuck in that power over and then misused it. And that's the trap of the love of power instead of the power of love. So you know, I think the question is, how do we avoid this trap?
Well, I like your word lure. I'm going back to that. I love words anyway.
Yes, I know you do, darling.
But it is really a lure, isn't it? Because it's about the market. It's about recognition. It's about all those things that you kind of need to survive as well. You know, combination is very twisting. As you say, twisted.
And so what is the seduction of power, though? Okay, why are we seduced by it? And you know, to me, it goes back to fear. Mm-hmm. The fear that we're really not enough.
Ah, very good, yes. I like that.
Okay, if we believed we were enough, we wouldn't need to have power over anyone or anything because we would see ourselves in every single person. And when we're really there, we don't need to have power over anyone. You know, this is an interesting side story, but I've watched, you know, people deal with power. You know, this lifetime has been about me understanding power and how it works. And I've done business with, you know, all the, you know, Donald Trump and all the boys. So I've always studied power. Who's powerful and who's not? Who's authentically powerful and who's not? And in my last marriage, interestingly enough, my husband was really into power, and of course my mother-in-law was really into power, and I could care less. You know, I just wanted to be free, you know. So I let them have all the power, and I remember thinking this all the time. They want the power, because we had a very large company. And they got a real hit. Oh, my mother-in-law ran the office, and, you know, and I just really didn't care. I was having too much fun being the rebel and, you know, having the pink cars and, you know. I was in Utah. I was just entertaining people. And
well, there's a power in that, Jackie.
Well, there probably was. I just did it my way. You know, I had more fun with it.
Yeah.
But I didn't need power over. I mean, you know, they were into controlling the money and this and that. I just didn't care. My goal, especially for the women in Utah, was to break them all loose, and for the men, too. It was a wonderful playground for me, for people to kind of move out of their stuckedness, if you will.
Right.
And so I kind of became the person that nobody could dare be. You know, the women certainly couldn't, and the men couldn't go there either. So I just kind of became the one that people like to talk about. But I had a lot of fun. I made my own fun.
Oh, that's great.
And
pink cars, I like that.
Oh,
power.
I had all the clothes, too.
Oh, great.
but I laughed at myself. I thought it was all very funny. I didn't take it serious. That was the difference. And I challenged power, you know, because I was in a place where the church was power up there. So I had a lot of opportunity to challenge it in my career, and it was a lot of fun. But now, because I rebelled against the power, and this is where, and I want to add this, is that I ended up losing everything in my marriage. You know, my husband, it doesn't matter, but it's a long story. But this goes back to her question about, you know, distancing yourself from something, you know. Because I distanced myself, I ended up hurting myself by not taking more responsibility and making certain that things were done properly.
Mm.
Okay? So instead of being in the game, I stepped out of the game. I became the rebel instead of being the responsible adult. And, you know, that was not a good solution either.
Mm-hmm.
I also want to talk here, you know, about all these spiritual teachers. And we're going to see a lot more of it with women, but with men, I've seen a lot of it because there are certainly more spiritual women than there are men in this path, this metaphysical path. And I've seen so many male teachers where the women were just throwing themselves at these men.
I know, it's kind of horrifying, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really.
Everybody wants to get the man who's got the spiritual activity going.
Well, it's a projection of their power onto what they perceive as a spiritual teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And they feel more powerful by being with them. If they felt powerful, they wouldn't need to do that.
Right.
Okay, that's really the core here. And, you know, again, we're back to, and the other thing is shame on the men. because they know how to set boundaries. And, you know, it's very seductive.
It's very flattering, yeah.
I'm sorry?
It's flattering.
It's flattering, but you can set boundaries. I know spiritual teachers who are men who know how to set those boundaries, and they're wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And they do it responsibly.
I think what's interesting about that is remembering that the spiritual journey is a slippery slope.
Is what?
Is a slippery slope at times, that any of these ego things, we can all be lured into them. You know, it's a real careful thing to make sure we're not, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I want to wrap this up here. The real goal is to be fully empowered. When you are, you don't need to have power over anyone. Give yourself permission to be powerful. And I think this is something people fear, power. And get a relationship with power. And I know they're going to cut us off here in just a minute.
they have a lot of power.
The other is, it's a choice. It's a mantra. It's the song of the earth and our souls. And it is the power of love versus the love of power. It really is. I mean, it's something that I really hope everybody really spends some time with this week. I know I have been. I've really been thinking about it. It is about giving yourself permission. It's about getting healed. It's also about healing powerless rage. And I think that's part of this whole feminine stuff of the powerless rage. And I think that's what a lot of women are processing for the planet. It's not just personal. I thank every one of them that are dealing with it, because I recognize what a wonderful contribution they're making. Ronnie, your website.
www.veronicaentwistle.com.
Your radio show
is Radiance by Design, BBS Radio, here on wonderful BBS Radio, 4 o'clock on Tuesdays, West Coast time, 7 o'clock East Coast time, and around the world, who knows. And thank you, Jackie. This is a wonderful show.
I think it's a great subject, folks, and I love to hear your emails and your input. We certainly thank all of you that are listening in. Sorry about what happened last week. We had some difficulties at BBS. It wasn't your fault. Good night, everyone, and I want to say a piece of me is in every one of you, and a piece of you is in every one of us. It can be no other way. We really are all one. When we get that, we don't have to worry about power. Love you, everyone. Good night.
Good night. Love you.